I thought it was kind of like how you see a Madden, maybe, like, you know, or on TV, you know, everybody's got the big contracts and you're playing like 8, 10, 12 years. But yeah, it was definitely a different reality for me. Like I think I was kind of expecting that, or maybe stay in one place, maybe one or two places, not really bounce around too much. Like, my favorite players kind of growing up was Ed Reed and Ray Lewis. I remember them playing for the Ravens. So like, that's kind of like how I saw it. But yeah, it wasn't like that. And I feel like it was great lessons that I learned in that process for sure. But expecting those type of contracts and kind of things like that is where my head was at. And I still think it's possible. I just don't think it happened exactly how I assumed it was going to happen, you know, starting off.
Welcome to Self-Equity, the podcast that dives into the inspiring journeys of founders, entrepreneurs, athletes, and entertainers. I'm your host, Jolene Tepedino, authorized officer and team business manager for the Zellniger, Dorfman, Carr, and Heritage Group at UBS. Today, we're sitting down with Kendall Williamson, safety for the Los Angeles Chargers. Kendall's journey through the NFL has given him a front row seat to the realities of money, contracts, and self-worth in a league where nothing is guaranteed. We're talking about how his mindset around value has changed, what stability really means when your career is uncertain, and how he's utilizing his network as a Stanford alumni to build on his brand beyond football. Joining me today as co-host is Ryan Lynch, financial advisor with the Zellniger, Dorfman, Carr, and Heritage Group. Hi, Kendall. Great to see you. Thanks for joining us on our Self-Equity podcast today.
It's phenomenal to be here. Phenomenal to be here. Thank you for having me.
So, Kendall, for those who may not know you, can you please introduce yourself?
So, my name is Kendall Williamson. I am currently going into my fourth year in the NFL with the Los Angeles Chargers. I also play for the Bills, play for Chicago. Alma mater is Stanford, so went there, studied mechanical engineering. Did 5 years there, and originally born and raised in Georgia.
What was that pivot like, mechanical engineering to football?
I mean, because I was doing it while I was in college, and it was just difficult, honestly, to be really good at both. There's one thing I learned in college is, honestly, it's really difficult to be very good at two things. Like, I did pretty well in school. Like, I had a 3.8, and I was really, really focused on my academics, and I still was prioritizing my athletics as well, but I felt like it took some time, specifically more focused on football, to be able to, you know, have the opportunity playing pro ball.
Lots of crossovers, right? The dedication, determination, discipline, the studying, all that good stuff. Kendall, when was the moment where you truly realized that your time and talent had real monetary value? And how did that realization start to influence the decisions you made on and off the field?
I feel like I originally realized it, honestly, in high school. So I have an older brother. He played D1 football, played at the University of Florida, and played in Minnesota. He also played in the NFL as well. So football was never, honestly, my plan growing up. Like I said, I was kind of a nerd. You know, I was really into my studies and everything like that. But kind of seeing his path and other people around me or his age, like, go to school for free, I was like, oh, like, I could actually get college paid for. And I feel like that's super big to come out of college debt free. Like, my degree was honestly worth, I think, like, over $250,000. Like, I would have had no way to be able to afford that. So, like, once I kind of saw that football was going to be an avenue for me to be able to get a free education, I went kind of all in on that. I was already training really heavy, but I took football a lot more seriously because I saw that it could be, there's a lot of opportunity behind that at the collegiate level.
Kendall, before you got in the league, what was your expectation of what being in the NFL would be like monetarily? And then what is it afterwards, now you're dealing with the reality of contracts, practice squad, being a later round draft pick who's stuck around for quite a while? What were your expectations versus the reality?
Yeah, I thought it was like, I thought it was kind of like how you see a Madden, maybe, like, you know, or on TV, you know, everybody's got the big contracts and you're playing like 8, 10, 12 years. But yeah, it was definitely a different reality for me. Like I think I was kind of expecting that, or maybe stay in one place, maybe one or two places, not really bounce around too much. Like, my favorite players kind of growing up was Ed Reed and Ray Lewis. I remember them playing for the Ravens. So like, that's kind of like how I saw it, but yeah, it wasn't like that. And I feel like it was
great lessons that I learned in that process for sure. But expecting those type of contracts and kind of things like that is where my head was at. And I still think it's possible. I just don't think it happened exactly how I assumed it was going to happen, you know, starting off.
So it's for sure possible. And I know you're working hard at it. It's just one of those things where I think not even just players, like every fan, right? You're just sitting there looking at these guys like, oh, they're going to the NFL. Maybe even family or friends that you grew up with are like, oh, well, he's an aided. And now you're sitting there like, well, I got to make the team first. Right. And then, like, we got to make sure the only part of my contract is guaranteed. I got to stay healthy. Like, it's just a lot different than I think most people expect it to be until you do sign that big second deal, which hopefully is on the horizon for you.
Yeah, for sure. It definitely is different. Like, it's more of a, truthfully, like, it's a day-to-day, week-to-week type of thing. Like, it's not, you could have a four-year contract, but, you know, if a team cuts you and none of it is guaranteed and you don't see any of the money, you know, that was in the contract. And that is definitely something that maybe I probably didn't understand before, and a lot of people probably don't understand. The contract is only fulfilled, like, if you make the team and if you were there, you know, and playing. And like on the 53-man roster and everything like that. And if that's not the case, it's not necessarily going to be all the way fulfilled, unless kind of like we mentioned, the guaranteed money.
Tell me a little bit about how, as a player, I'm always, you know, curious and enamored with the way in which your identity is so tied to, you know, who you are as a player. Is it hard to shake that off, you know, after games, after the season, and get back to Kendall is? I know you do a lot of giving back to your community and such. What is that feeling like?
I would say truthfully, it is. And I think anybody, like player or whatever career you have, if you're very invested and spend a lot of time, energy, and effort into it, it's hard to not see yourself in that a lot. I mean, I feel like I'm lucky to where I also never was like sports was my end all be all. Mm-hmm. I always knew there was other potential opportunities. So I think that honestly helped me and has helped me to just know that like I'll be good either way, and that God has a plan for me either way, whether I play for 1 year or whether I play for 10 years, whatever it is. So yeah, I feel like that's definitely helped. But it's hard to detach from that. I mean, it's like it's almost impossible. Like I've still played the game since I was 8 years old, you know, so like I don't think it's going to go anywhere, my identity being in that as well. But I feel like I've had some things that have happened for sure for it. So it's not all the way in sports.
So Kendall, one of the things that we talk with, especially, you know, younger guys who are, you know, in their respective sports, we'll just focus on football. You graduated from Stanford in 22. So early on in what's been going on in the collegiate landscape with NIL and whatnot, guys getting paid, transfer around a lot more freely. So talk to us about why you picked Stanford aside from the great academics. And did any of what's happening right now kind of impact your decision? And why'd you stay at Stanford as long as you did?
Honestly, Stanford was the college I wanted to go to, whether I had football or not. Like I had been thinking about Stanford for a while. I remember when I was like a really young kid, just hearing about like seeing commercials about like how good of a school it was. And I thought it used to be an Ivy and everything like that. And I was like, oh, I want to go there. I always saw that as a place I could potentially be. It didn't really impact me directly. Like we weren't getting paid at Stanford when I was there. I think they got paid literally the quarter after I left. They set up a collective, you know, so sometimes the timing is bad. but yeah, I NIL was just kicking off. For me, kind of why I stayed was I kind of already got a sense that the transfer portal was going to be big. And not that I wasn't willing to, you know, put my talent on the line and go somewhere else and try and see what could happen. But I really liked my coaches. I really liked my players, like my teammates that I was playing with. And I thought it was just a place for me to be and finish off my fifth year. I thought I had everything right where I was to like make a run for the league. So I just didn't really feel like there was any point in me leaving. You know, I was committed to the team, you know, win, lose, or draw. Like, those are my brothers and those are my coaches. So I wanted to fight with them for my last year that I had. I'm eligible.
And part of the reason we bring it up is we talked to a lot of people, athletes we work with, other people on the podcast, about, you know, staying in one place and really building relationships, right? You have an incredible alumni network. You were a graduate of Stanford. You went through it the whole time. So, you know, you have that to fall back on and to continue to network as you go, not just in any future careers, but just in life in general. So what is that like for you? And how did that shape the way you think about long-term opportunity, life beyond football?
That definitely had an impact, but it wasn't an impact I really realized until, honestly, the end of my college career and more recently. Because I went primarily for the academics, and I think I also wasn't at an age to really understand the value in a network. Like, that was never something that really crossed my mind at that age, like going at 17. But kind of once my collegiate career was coming to an end, I was like, oh, like, I really haven't even tried to connect with some people in this network, especially while I'm, you know, playing football. I feel like that's the best time to do it and take advantage of the opportunities around you. So then I started kind of getting into that more. But in my first 2 years in the league, like, I feel like I was so heavily focused on football that that was kind of a second thought. But now this past year, I feel like I've done a better job of trying to, you know, grow that network, grow my relationships in the Stanford alumni network. Like, I went to a couple of Stanford alumni events and have met a lot of alumni now and want to continue to grow that network, because I see, like, I know it's extremely valuable. I know other people who are pro athletes who went to Stanford who, you know, even gave me the advice, like, dude, you need to, you know, make sure you're staying connected with the people at this school, because they're in very high places and they're great people as well. So that's definitely something that's become much larger consideration for me now.
We have the draft coming up, right, in like a month. What was that process like for you, going from, all right, like, I'm spending a lot of time studying, I'm graduating from Stanford, you've achieved an incredible accomplishment, to now I'm moving into my career? It's a whirlwind of a period of time where you have to just focus solely on football, like you said, trying to go through and figure out where I'm going to live, you know, what team I'm going to be on, where's my family going to go, how much money am I going to make? Like, what was that process like for you? And then once you did get drafted and figure out where you're going to be, how did you start trying to plan the next phase of your life, especially financially?
For me, it was really like drinking water through a fire. It was like, it was a whirlwind. I feel like when I went from my fourth year to my fifth year, I mean, like, my focus had shifted primarily from academics to, like, I'm about to make the league. Like, that was where my head was at. So I feel like I kind of went from academics and ball to, like, oh, it's just about ball. Like, I'm about to make this happen. So I feel like I already had the mindset of, like, ball, ball, ball. But it did definitely get, you know, taxing mentally, you know, and physically as well, just going from the season ending to, okay, now we're going right into training and your whole future is dependent on, you know, how you perform in, you know, a couple of tests. One thing my dad always says is keep the main thing, and then everything else will fall into place. So for me, it was, I have to make sure that my skill is as good as possible. I'm as clean and crisp on all these drills as possible. I know as much as I need to when I'm going into these meetings. So that's where my mind was at. It wasn't even honestly on the financial aspect of things, because I had no idea if I was going to get drafted or where I would be drafted. Like, I was thinking I was a third, like, I knew I was going to be a third day to UDFA guy. But I feel like once you get to the back end of the draft, you have no idea. Like, you could be a sixth rounder or you could be, you know, undrafted. It could be either or. But once I did get drafted, I feel like I also have a really good mentor and trainer who had connected me with a financial advisor who's been really great. We kind of had a plan, and it changed obviously once I was on practice squad. So for me, like, it was really just, you know, we're going to build up a rainy day fund and then we're going to move from there. It wasn't like I was getting, you know, $1 million in my first year and then I had more to work with. So we just kind of went with the plan based off of my situation at that time and point and just kept chugging along.
If you had to give the next Kendall Williamson, the next kid out of Stanford, who's like on the fifth to seventh round pick, maybe UDFA kid, some financial lessons, like things to look out for going through the process of making it to the league, and what are some things you can give back to a younger person now having gone through it?
I would say, kind of like I was just talking about with my dad, to keep the main thing, like, if you focus on football and you commit your time, energy, and efforts to get it better, you will have more opportunities that will come. And as more opportunities come, you'll take advantage of it and all the finances will handle themselves. I think a couple things as far as finances would definitely be, like, the illusion of money is never more important than actually having money. So, like, it doesn't really matter, like, you know, maybe more materialistic things that you may want to purchase, I would just say, you know, keep your head down until those things are just like chump change to you. Like, for example, I drove I didn't get a car until this year. I've been driving my dad's car for 3 years, and I'm about to ship it back to him actually like the next couple of weeks. Like, and then also I had a vet when I was in Chicago. Really, he was very good. I think he was starting probably since his rookie year, and I think he was 4 years in. And when I saw it, I saw him one time we were working out, and he gave me a ride, and he had a Toyota Camry. And I was like, you don't see too many guys who like starting through 4 years, about to get a big contract and, you know, driving a Toyota Camry. So like when I saw that, I was like, oh yeah, like I definitely like, if he can do it, like that was, he was definitely a guy who I looked up to when it came to that, because he didn't care about any of that stuff, like any of the flashy stuff, because he was like, it doesn't matter. I would also say like invest into your financial literacy is a good point. And, you know, kind of just build knowledge around areas of interest. Another big one I probably would say is just comparison. Comparison is the thief of joy. Everybody's running their own race, and you don't need to look to the left or the right to see what they're doing or what they're buying or what they're spending on, because it has nothing to do with you. And I feel like the only way like it's can be beneficial is when it motivates you to, you know, to be better than what you're doing. And if it's, you know, making you want to do things that are out of your character, then, you know, just leave it be. And then the last part would probably be aware of, you know, who you may potentially be financially responsible for. And that could be friends, family, girlfriend, whatever it is. Like, just be very aware of how they move and if and how it changes, you know, once things do happen. I'm lucky enough to have a family that has like been very understanding of my circumstance. And I've tried to provide and help them in any way I can. But I've had a lot of people who have been, you know, very understanding, but a lot of people don't have that. A lot of people, you know, have, you know, a lot of greedy people around them. And I'm lucky enough to not have that, but I would say be aware if that is somebody in your circle. And you have to be able to cut ties with those people, because at the end of the day, you know, you're the one who's putting that time, energy, and effort into making your dream come true and should benefit from whatever you gain. It's not necessarily for somebody else unless you're choosing to give it to somebody else.
I was at an NIL event we did at Villanova for the basketball team in the preseason this year, because we're partnered with the men's and women's basketball team. So it's like an educational symposium. And one of the, you know, they're starting to make money through NIL. So, and they're young, right? And these are 18, 19-year-old kids. And one of the questions they asked was, how do I deal with family members asking me for money that, one, I might not have to support myself, let alone, you know, to support them on top of myself. But how do I have hard conversations with them? Because, you know, they're, how do you have those hard conversations with a 19-year-old kid with aunts, uncles, parents? So hearing it from us is one thing, right? Because we can be the buffers as financial advisors, but hearing from a fellow athlete is living it, is fortunate to not have to deal with it because of their personal circumstances. But that's tremendous advice. So thank you for that.
Sure, for sure. And I'm not going to lie, I'd be telling people, I'm like, my financial advisor said, nah, I can't do that.
Exactly. Come on. You've got, not only that, you've got taxes to pay, right? It's not just, hey, you're making this bag and it's all yours. I mean, you've got a plan for the future with that money. You know, you can't blow it all. And yeah, you know, everyone has their hand out and hand in the bag trying to get your money. And no, you got to say no, because it's also not a loan, right? These are all gifts. Right, no one's giving it back to you. Like, hey, just help me out. Not happening. Okay. I'm always amazed to hear about players' thought processes in the moment. You know, you're making split second decisions on the field. You're reading the field. You're looking at your other players, your teammates, the opposition. Can you just give us a little slice into what that feeling is like and how it just flutters through your minds and you just execute?
I mean, I feel like it starts before you even get on the field. Like, preparation is the biggest key to success. I feel like easy. Like, it's more important than almost anything. I really and truly believe that. So I would say preparation, and that's different for everybody. So that could be somebody's physical preparation, their mental preparation, their film study. You know, maybe they get extra reps of, you know, something that they weren't doing well at. So preparing it anyway and getting those reps in over and over and over and over again is what I feel like allows people to go on the field and not think. I think it's honestly about not thinking at all. Like, I've had multiple times in my career where, because I'm such a like a analytical person, that sometimes it's worked against me, where I'm overanalyzing a little bit too much I think the best advice that I've heard throughout my career for me specifically is to not think. Like, don't even think when I'm out there. So that's what I try my best to do, honestly, is to not think about anything and just trust the preparation that I put in and then let it fly from there.
You played in multiple organizations now, right? You've seen a few different stops in the league. One of the things that I'm always curious about is you talk about stability, right? Like in your own life, financially, like where you're going to live, all that stuff. But organizationally, how do stable organizations or different organizations create the ability for players to have success and grow their own careers, right? We've seen it at the quarterback level where organizations fail players more than players fail organizations. Sam Darnold just won a Super Bowl. Mm-hmm. How has maybe the Chargers being the right spot for you specifically allows you to flourish and have some stability in your playing career?
I think it all just started with opportunity. They gave me opportunity. Not that every place gave me an opportunity. I feel like I took advantage of the opportunity the most there. And it showed, and I think they really allowed me to build, to grow in the system, to learn, and to continue to develop. And like, I owe them everything, truthfully. Like, they've shown me a lot of love, a lot of love. The coaches have shown me a lot of love and have encouraged me and supported me in ways that I didn't really know would happen at the professional level. And I had a lot of great coaches everywhere. Like, don't get me wrong. I think every organization I've been at has been stellar. I've had great coaches and great people at every single organization. But I think that they definitely offered me an opportunity that I hadn't had. You know, also some things just happened to fall in order. Like, I remember, so I got signed off of a workout to the practice squad in the middle of the 2024-2025 season. So I don't really know that much. Like, I'm just getting on the team, but we had three safeties on the 53-man roster go down within 2 weeks. So, like, I had to play. and that was, like, pretty early on. So, like, I feel like also they gave me the opportunity to play when things like that did happen. And even though I was very early on with the team, so yeah, I feel like different organizations, they may handle it differently. I feel like the Chargers showed me a lot of love and gave me a lot of grace. And, you know, we worked through some things together, and they gave me an opportunity that I'm so grateful for.
Kendall, I want to talk a minute about your LinkedIn presence. I see that you're intentionally active on LinkedIn in a way that most athletes are not. What made you see the professional presence and storytelling as a form of equity while you're still playing?
I had a guy about a year ago who reached out to me on LinkedIn, and we actually work together now, but he reached out to me on LinkedIn about, you know, branding and just being more present on LinkedIn or in these different spaces. And I was kind of like, yeah, like, I don't really know, man. Like, I'm just trying to focus on football now and make the team. And that happened. We stayed in contact. You know, he invited me to certain things, and I was just kind of seeing more and more like, okay, well, I do have a lot more value to provide outside of just playing football, but also it's a good time while I'm playing football to extend my network and also meet different people in different industries, especially like in a market like LA. Like, I feel like there's so much going on, and obviously, since it's on the internet, you can connect with anybody anywhere. So I feel like it was just a great opportunity to meet people, to hear other people's stories, and honestly just use that as another way to connect with others in the world, you know, who are doing great things. So I felt like it was a great avenue for that, for sure.
I agree. I think it's, you know, it's important for you to have that sort of like business profile. And like you said, just extend your network. You know, there's more visibility in different channels. It's not just, you know, the social media that we're used to, but also, you know, kind of focused on that business profile. So
right. You definitely opened my eyes to things I wasn't like, and I still am like, football is, until, you know, I hang up the cleats, will be my priority always and everything. Through, I want to be as great as I can in that. But I do realize that we, especially in the offseason, like, we have time to get into whatever interests we have. Damo was just one for me. Like, some people like playing video games, or some people may like woodworking or whatever. Like, that was just something that for me, I'm like, okay, well, I have free time. Well, I may as well, you know, use it on something that I feel like could be beneficial now and in the future.
So, like you said, until they rip the jersey off of you, football is the priority and what you're, you know, training for and your goals are for. But what do you think life after football is for Kendall? What do you want to get really accomplished, work towards? Could be things you're starting to work on now, if you said on LinkedIn, but what do you see your next phase of life look like?
So hopefully it'll be in like 15 years.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I definitely would see myself starting my own business. I think business and entrepreneurship is something that is very interesting to me. I feel like that's how many people, you know, historically have built wealth by owning their own businesses. And then I also like real estate. That's something I've been learning a lot this offseason. I've had great mentors to teach me in these different spaces. So that's honestly where I've tried to develop a lot of connections are in these different spaces, business entrepreneurship and real estate, because that's kind of where I would see myself down the line. And then definitely want to be heavily involved in my community or just supporting a community in any way that I can. Like that's something that I see that is very important, is giving back, you know, especially when I've been given so much, I would like to give back in whatever way I can.
Was there a teammate you watched closely, not for how they played, but for how they handled business or preparation or life off the field?
There's a bunch that come to mind. That's actually like a very tough question. Like I'd say probably almost every single vet in my PB room, but like one of the guys I really liked playing with and talking to a lot was Aloe Gilman. He was with us, then went to the Ravens, and then he now just signed with the Chiefs. But I loved how he played. I love how the fire he brought. But then off the field, like we would always be talking about stuff off the field. Like I'd asked him about, you know, real estate stuff and different like financial things and mentality wise. Like just there was a lot of different conversations we had that we shared. So like he was somebody that I definitely like, you know, was very happy I met, very happy I shared a locker room with. And I actually also played with his younger brother at Stanford. So I already knew him before that too. I knew of him before that, but yeah, no, he's definitely a good one for sure.
So you play for maybe one of the most, you know, fun coaches in the NFL. Anything Coach Harbaugh's done that's just like out of the blue, crazy, where you're like, what is this guy doing in the locker room?
Coach Harbaugh he's such a great coach. He's a great character. He loves football. I think that's probably my favorite thing about him is like how much he loves football. Like it makes you want to love football even more because you're like, I need to love football just as much as this guy. Like I love football, but he loves football. But yeah, I can't think of a specific one off the top of my head. But he's a real good guy, a real funny guy. But yeah, for sure.
Kendall, one question we like to ask everyone on the podcast is, what does sweat equity mean to you?
I feel like it means everything. Like your work ethic, what you put into whatever it is. And I think it's the only thing that, you know, really truly matters. Your mentality and your input is the two biggest things. And like for me, your input is just sweat equity. What are you willing to sacrifice? What work are you willing to do for whatever you're chasing? Also, obviously, like kind of your mentality. What is your mental approach to what you have? But outside of that, there's not really that's that relevant. You know, the situation isn't that relevant. You know, what's up against you isn't that relevant. You know, all these things that you can think of, I feel like are just excuses and they just distract from the main thing. And the main thing is chop wood, carry water, just put in your work and everything is going to, you know, figure itself out. But yeah, and it's hard sometimes I feel like because you may kind of like I've said, like I've compared myself many a times. Like I'm in an industry where it's almost, it's nearly impossible to not compare yourself. But I feel like when I kind of refocus on my input and just putting in the right work for whatever I'm chasing, like I get back to, you know, realizing that that's all that matters is sweat equity.
It's amazing. And just keep the main thing, Kendall, right? Kendall, thank you so much for spending time with us today. We appreciate you joining us on our Self Equity podcast. I look forward to see all the amazing things that you accomplish. We wish you all the best, continued success.
Thank you all so much for having me, though. I really appreciate it. And yeah, it was a great time.
Thank you.
This podcast is presented for informational purposes only and should not be relied upon as investment advice or the basis for making any investment decisions. It does not constitute an offer to sell or a solicitation of an offer to buy any specific product or service. UBS does not provide legal or tax advice, and we would recommend listeners to obtain appropriate independent professional advice. Some of the views and opinions expressed may not be those of UBS Group AG or its affiliates. UBS Financial Services, Inc. offers investment advisory services in its capacity as an SEC-registered investment advisor and brokerage services in its capacity as an SEC-registered broker-dealer. These services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. It is important that you understand the ways in which we conduct business and that you carefully read the agreements and disclosures that we provide about the products or services we offer. For more information, please review Client Relationship Summary, provided at ubs.com/relationship summary. UBS Financial Services, Inc. is a subsidiary of UBS Group AG and is a member of FINRA and SIPC.